City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
To the Windy City Queer Cast, show number 508. I'm Amy Matheny here in Chicago, and you know, I have been racing these past weeks to watch as many movies as I possibly can because the high holidays are upon us. The Oscars, Oscar, is going to be here on Sunday, February 24th, in just a couple of weeks. The 85th Academy Awards, and who better to be on the show to talk with me about movies and the Oscars but our very own movie queen, Richard Knight Jr. Hello, Richard. How are you?
Oh, I'm over the moon, darling, because it's Oscar season.
I get to talk
with you about movies.
I love it. Do you have like an Oscar tradition in terms of, do you get dressed up? Do you make a cocktail? Do you bet on with other people? Or do you have other people over?
No, because it's so ironic. Well, ironic, I don't know. A longtime movie critic, I'm the worst Oscar predictor in the world.
You are? Is that because you predict with what you really want to happen, not what you think should happen?
Yeah. And a lot of times I'm so bitter because somebody didn't get a nomination. Certain years I'm better than others.
Yeah.
But my husband and I usually have a little get-together, and we do, you know, the little trivia thing, and we hand out the little mini Oscar and the whole thing. Yeah. And what I usually do, because I'm also really, really big into the music, is I make a soundtrack compilation for the guests, and I make like a best song compilation. So they, you know, a little, we do gift bags. We're so gay.
Oh, I love it. Well, you, I hope, will be including in your gift bags this year the Scrooge and Marley CD if you're doing songs, because you've kind of entered the film year in a new way in the past year, producing, directing, acting in. You're such a Mel Gibson or what's his name? Mel Gibson or the guy who did like Running with Wolves or Dancing with Wolves, Costner. You're like, or you could be a Barbara with the Yentl. Maybe that's more what you're like. But you did it all, like writing, directing, producing, acting with Scrooge and Marley this year. When you look back on 2012 and the year in movies of which you helped create a movie, you know, what do you think are going to be some of the thoughts that you have on just the year in general?
Well, you know, a lot of interesting things fell through the cracks, as they always do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy to see that some of the sequel-itis is sort of abating.
Oh, good.
maybe that certain things that, you know, they thought would do really, really well didn't do quite as well.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't say sequel-itis is abating because it's probably never going to happen.
I was about to say, you think it was abating? I don't know. Isn't
like,
Superman coming out this
wrong.
Year and other things? Yes. The
you
Hobbit,
know,
that's kind
I mean,
of a sequel, right?
I was sad to see certain queer-themed things not do well. I loved a really challenging piece like Cloud Atlas, which, you know, could not have been a queer movie. We'll
I
go back
dug
and look
it,
at
too.
It again.
Yeah, yeah.
And I loved I so appreciate the risk that the Wachowskis and Tom Tickford took with that. And I think if people gave it a chance, you know, Prometheus, the Ridley Scott movie, which I called a brilliant mess. It really is, but nothing looks like that film. I mean, he really should do sci-fi. I'm astounded how many films came out and disappeared overnight. Like, you could spend $1 billion on a movie and it's gone, and you can spend $2 on a movie like Beasts of the Southern Wild, and people go crazy, but there's no rhyme or reason to this kind of stuff.
So do you feel like it was a riskier year? Am I hearing in some ways like the Wachowskis just like went, fuck this, we're going to do what we want to do. We got a lot of money, we got a lot of power, you know, and were some people, you know, just making films for $2 more than they have in the years past and getting them made?
I sort of feel like maybe audiences are a lot of things are happening to converge together. Number one, the formulas aren't holding as well. You know, audiences are really wised up and they're smart and they have options. We don't have to go out to the theater to see a movie. You can, you know, watch stuff on television. There's all these distractions. And so when you go to, it had better really hit all the, you know, fire like crazy on all cylinders. So that's part of it. And I think people are just wanting more. There's this underlying yearning for different, for something that's not so formulaic. And that's why some of these little pictures sort of, you know, break through. And I always go back to what Shirley MacLaine said in The Slate-Lead Closet, the, you know, documentary about 100 years of queers in the film, in the cinema. The audience is always ahead of the filmmakers, or certainly of Hollywood, the studio, you know, where they're working 3 or 4 years in advance and have this kind of, you know, we have to get so many, because it's a product.
Right.
It's this corporate thing. So I think some of that formula stuff did break down. You're seeing now audiences are, there's an audience for older people like to go to the movies.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know,
we definitely.
Best Exotic Marigold Hotel, Quartet, you know.
Hope Springs.
Exactly. Not that I really wanted to, you know, picture Meryl Streep giving Tommy Lee Jones head, but.
But some people can relate, you know.
Some people can. I mean, you know.
When you go to the movies before 3 o'clock, and believe you, those people who want to save a buck are going before 3 o'clock. They ain't your age and my age, Richard. They're, you know,
right.
People who are much older. It's a great thing for them to do is go to the movies, you know.
So I think stuff like that is great. It's still not necessarily, you know, so great for queer audiences, because we haven't seen a lot of queer movies make a lot of money.
Yeah, it was not a very queer year. Do you agree with that? I mean, it was not a year, you know, this isn't our Brokeback year. This isn't kind of our, I don't know, Kimberly Pierce.
I liked a lot of indie movies. I loved a lot of local stuff, actually, that broke through nationally. I loved Stephen Combs' The Wise Kids.
Yeah.
I loved Nate and Margaret.
Mm-hmm.
In The Family, the Patrick Wang film, kind of what I really like is sort of what we try to do with Scrooge and Marley is that you're seeing that the people being queer in films is just another part of the story. It's just there, like Perks of Being a Wildflower.
Right, right.
You know, and it's not the necessarily the coming out story. We're just there. We're just part of the mix. And there seems to be, you know, that which was something very disappointing in a movie like Magic Mike.
Right.
Like, come on, how many gay men waited months and months to see that film? And they couldn't have had one of those strippers, you know, have like some queer yearning.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Well, because it would really be more believable if they did, if one of them did.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is interesting. You know, I had a straight woman that I know the other day. She just, you know, she's, you know, a few years older. And she was just like, it's such an exciting time for you. I'm so excited. And I was like, well, you mean with like the gay marriage and all and the inauguration? And she was like, yes, yes. It just really feels like, you know, it's all happening and it feels like it's happening suddenly. And she goes, I know it's not all suddenly, but it feels like, you know, the integration and everything is just happening. And I'm sure it does feel that way for our allies who maybe have not been, you know, walking along the activist line with us and, you know, mm-hmm. in it deep, but, you know, are supportive. And so I think what you're talking about is something that the mainstream is feeling, that, you know, gay characters are just folded in now, you know, to the fabric and the stories that are being told in so many arenas, in television and books and in the newspaper, and our president mentioning it, you know, I mean, and having...
Right, but I am talking in film, which for some reason culturally always seems to be last, because
yes.
we're already there a lot of ways in all the other mediums you talked about. I'm talking about indie cinema, which is so far ahead of mainstream, you know, studio product.
Right.
I mean, and this is not to say that television also doesn't create, like, huge stereotypes. I mean, it's great that we're there.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
But I'm not so crazy about, you know, the sissy character in The New Normal. I mean, of course we have sissy people. What's wrong with that? It's fabulous, but...
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
I understand. Well, we are going to be looking, of course, at probably the less indie, although there's definitely some little engines that could. They got some nominations this year at the, I guess, the biggest show around the world, the 85th Academy Awards, which are happening on Sunday, February 24th. You got to make your plans, make your mixtape or whatever you're going to do, and your little gift bags.
Absolutely.
It's all airing on ABC with host Seth MacFarlane. I want to talk to you about that and what you think your choices are going to be for that night, kind of who will win, who should win, and I'd love to do that with you, and hopefully you listening will, you know, go through this as well, and maybe we'll influence how you pick on your office pool or your home party ballot. So Richard Knight Jr. on the whole show with me, plus I've got lots of GLBT news, what's going on in the theater scene. It's really kicking up as we you know, head into this month of February, and much, much more. So we'll be back. It's Oscar time.
Glamour, romance, and sensuality. See the Joffrey Ballet in American Legends. Jerome Robbins' Interplay conveys the wonderful playfulness and unfettered curiosity of youth. Gerald Arpino's lush duet, Sea Shadow, honors the 90th anniversary of his birth. The voice of Frank Sinatra sets you swinging in Twyla Tharp's classic Nine Sinatra Songs, costumed by Oscar de la Renta. Stanton Welch's exuberant and theatrical Son of Chambers Symphony makes its Chicago premiere. It's the Joffrey Ballet in American Legends at the Auditorium Theater of Roosevelt University, February 13th through the 24th. For tickets, call 800-982-2787 or visit joffrey.org.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Week in News.
Illinois' same-sex marriage bill is headed for a full Senate vote after the measure passed out of the Senate Executive Committee on February 5th. The committee voted 9-5 to send the bill for a full vote. Senate sponsor Heather Steens argued that civil unions passed 2 years ago created a second-class status for LGBT couples.
Scott Brown, the Massachusetts Republican who surprised many with his victory in a 2010 special election, announced that he will not enter the special election to replace outgoing Senator John Kerry, who will be Secretary of State. The decision by Brown leaves the Republican Party scrambling to find a candidate for the June 25th election. Brown was a relative moderate during his time in the Senate, working with Republicans to approve the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, among other issues.
In Tennessee, the so-called Don't Say Gay bill has been revived as Republican State Senator Stacey Campfield has filed a measure that would discourage talking about homosexuality in schools. The measure, called the Classroom Protection Act, builds on Don't Say Gay and would prohibit elementary and middle school teachers from bringing up homosexuality. It would also require guidance counselors to report to parents conversations about their child's sexuality.
The Wyoming Senate narrowly rejected a bill that would prohibit discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity. Opponents claim Senate File 131 would create a protected class of employees and would result in lawsuits against employers. The sponsor, Senator Chris Rothfuss, a Democrat from Laramie, said the bill aimed to recognize and prevent discrimination. Almost two dozen other states have adopted similar measures.
President Barack Obama said he is in favor of the inclusion of openly gay people in the Boy Scouts of America. Obama said nobody should be barred from the Boy Scouts. Gays and lesbians should have access and opportunity the same way everybody else does.
Four Scout leaders whose petitions on change.org sparked a national movement to end the Boy Scouts' anti-gay ban delivered more than 1.4 million petition signatures to Boy Scouts headquarters as the organization's board of directors began a three-day meeting to discuss overturning the policy. The petitions were delivered by Jennifer Tyrell, a lesbian mom removed from her position as den leader of her 8-year-old son's Cub Scout pack. Greg Bork, a gay dad who was forced to resign his position of assistant scoutmaster, Eric Anderson, the father of an 18-year-old gay Boy Scout who was barred from receiving his Eagle Award, and Will Oliver, a 20-year-old gay Eagle Scout.
But the Boy Scouts of America is delaying a vote on possibly changing its policy, banning gay scouts and troop leaders until May. The group said last month that it would reach a decision about the ban after a three-day meeting of the National Executive Board, but determined that the debate needed more time to play out. The delay comes 7 months after the scouts reaffirmed its stance banning gay members.
In Washington, D.C., Mayor Vincent Gray, Fire Chief Kenneth Ellerby, and Deputy Police Chief Diane Grooms were among the city officials who attended a memorial remembrance for slain trans woman Deani Jones. Jones, who was 23, was stabbed to death on February 2, 2012, while sitting at a bus stop near her home. A 56-year-old district man was indicted on a charge of first-degree murder while armed in connection with Jones' murder.
Minnesota Governor Mark Dayton mentioned marriage equality in his third State of the State address. I want Minnesota to be a state which affirms that freedom for one means freedom for everyone, and where no one is told that it is illegal to marry the person you love, he said. Dayton also talked about raising taxes on the rich and praised the state's agricultural efforts, among other things.
Congressman Gerald Nadler, the Democrat from New York, the ranking Democrat on the House Judiciary Subcommittee on the Constitution, led a bipartisan coalition of congressional champions of immigration reform and civil rights in reintroducing the Uniting American Families Act, or UAFA, on February 5th. UAFA would provide gays and lesbians foreign partners with equal immigration rights.
In Philadelphia, local performer and LGBT advocate Nicholas Rocco DeFinis, age 26, has joined Oprah Winfrey, Britney Spears, and former President Bill Clinton on the Wall of Fame at Gino's Steaks Restaurant. In 2009, DeFinis was crowned Mr. Gay Congeniality Philadelphia and Mr. Gay Philadelphia runner-up 2 years later.
In world news, Russia's children's rights ombudsman, Pavel Astakhov, ruled out any possibility of adoption of Russian orphans by French gay couples if France introduces same-sex marriage. Russia recently approved a ban on United States adoptions, citing the alleged unwillingness of the United States side to cooperate in investigation of cases of child abuse.
In Canada, so-called gay cure therapist Dr. Aubrey Levin, age 74, has been sentenced to 5 years in jail after being convicted of molesting male patients. Levin was convicted on 3 counts of sexual assault. Court of Queens Bench Justice Donna Shelley told the disgraced doctor that it was a horrible violation of the trust of these 3 patients.
For the first time, Denmark has granted asylum to a transgender person due to the risk of persecution in her home country. Guatemalan trans rights activist Fernanda Milan was granted asylum after she was granted a last-minute reprieve last September. when the refugee board put her deportation on hold and reopened her case.
Ugandan authorities have detained and plan to deport British gay play producer David Cecil back to the UK. Cecil was arrested last year for producing and staging a play in August that featured a gay businessman who was killed by his own employees. Taken away from his Ugandan wife and young child, Cecil is hoping to appeal against the court's decision.
And in entertainment news, on the heels of her Super Bowl halftime show, Beyoncé has announced dates for her Mrs. Carter Show World Tour in support of her fifth studio album. Things kick off April 15th with a show at the Combank Arena in Belgrade, Serbia. The North American leg of her tour will start June 28th in Los Angeles, with dates in other cities such as July 6th, Chicago, of course, on July 17th, Montreal on July 22nd, and in Brooklyn on August 3rd.
Amazon claims it signed a deal to become the sole subscription video streaming service to carry the PBS hit Downton Abbey. Starting in mid-June, Prime Instant Video will be the only place to stream Season 3 of Downton Abbey, which is currently airing in the U.S., as well as Seasons 4 and 5 if the show goes that long. Presently, only Season 1 can be streamed on Netflix. Season 1 and 2 are available on Hulu with ads.
Levon Pepper Pear Davis, a star of the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League in the 1940s, and an inspiration for the movie A League of Their Own, has died. She was 88 years old. Pear Davis was a model for the character played by Gina Davis and served as a consultant on the 1992 film.
Madonna will auction off items from her record-breaking MDNA tour to benefit Hurricane Sandy victims. The singer will sell items that may include the majorette costume and the caged basque she wore on stage, as well as props for the show.
Adult film star Arpad Miklos, born Peter Cosma, was found dead in his apartment on February 4th due to an apparent suicide. Miklos, known for his work in more than 50 film titles, was 45 years old and resided in New York, where he also worked as an escort. Before working as a porn actor, he worked as a chemical engineer.
Robin Roberts is set to return to Good Morning America on February 20th. Roberts will be returning 5 months to the day after she took a leave of absence for treatment of a rare blood disorder called myelodysplastic syndrome.
Simon Cowell is in talks with Fox to bring his upcoming British cooking show, Food, Glorious Food, to the United States. The British version centers around four judges who travel the country looking for a recipe good enough to be sold in Britain's upscale Marks and Spencer retail stores. The winner walks away with about $31,000 in prizes. And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Hey guys, this is Miss Cleo. I want you to listen to Windy City Queercast.
Culture Club, Culture Club, Culture Club. Theater,
music,
dance,
art,
performance,
provocative,
hilarious,
exciting,
weird,
innovative,
campy,
edgy,
original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of February 11th, 2013, you are in Chicago's Culture Club.
Chicago Shakespeare Theater's unforgettable season continues with Julius Caesar, Shakespeare's epic tale of ambition, betrayal, and consequence. Don't miss the most enduring political thriller in history. Now playing through March 24th, visit chicagoshakes.com for information and tickets to Julius Caesar.
Love blooms on opposite sides of the fence in the sassy and sexy musical, The Pajama Game, directed by Marriott Theatre Artistic Associate Peter Sullivan. Based on the novel 7½ Cents by Richard Bissell, The Pajama Game is centered around the Sleep Tight Pajama Factory, where the workers' demands for a raise are being ignored. Running now through March 3rd at the Theater and Interpretation Center at Northwestern University. For tickets, visit tick.northwestern.edu.
Don't miss the Writers Theater production of Sweet Charity, scored for a live jazz combo. The Chicago Sun-Times calls this classical dance music a knockout. While New City raves, Sweet Charity is full-blooded, euphoric, soulful, and no-holds-barred fantastic. The Tribune calls star Tiffany Topol astoundingly infectious and adds Sweet Charity lights up the stage. For tickets, visit writerstheater.org.
And the Goodman Theater presents Teddy Ferrara, a gripping new drama by Christopher Shin. It's Gabe's senior year of college, and his future looks bright. He runs the queer students group and he recently started dating a great guy. But when a campus tragedy occurs, it ignites a firestorm and throws Gabe's world into disorder. Get your tickets today at goodmantheater.org. Teddy Ferrara is running now through March 3rd. And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Anyone out there? Bueller? Bueller? Post a comment at WindyCityQueerCast.com.
If the stars were mine, I'd give them all to you. I'd pluck them down right from the sky and leave it only blue. I would never let the sun forget to shine upon your face. So when others would have rain clouds, you'd have only sunny days. If the stars were mine, I'd tell you what I'd do. I'd put the stars right in a jar and give them all to you.
So the 85th Academy Awards, Sunday, February 24th on ABC. I want to say first, Richard, that I'm pretty psyched about Seth MacFarlane hosting. I think he's kind of your kind of guy. You know, if I had to have a straight Richard Knight Jr., it'd be Seth MacFarlane, honestly. I mean, he plays piano, he croons, he writes, he's a funny actor, and he's charming. I mean, you and he are like the straight and gay version of each other. But I'm pretty psyched about him. How about you?
I actually am very psyched about him. I was kind of holding out hope for Jimmy Fallon. And so when they came up with Seth MacFarlane, I thought, you know, that's pretty close. I like that idea. You know, really, really fast, witty, fun. He's going to maybe bring some new things. And maybe he's going to honor some traditions, which I like.
Yeah. He's got an old school style about him. You know, he loves big band music, and I really think he'll play up his love of Sinatra and all the Rat Pack, and I think he'll really play that up, but he will modernize just because he is so clever, and he's not crass, but he's not PC, you know? He really likes to be cutting edge, so I'm pretty... We're going to have to talk afterward about what that's like, and we will be having a post show, but with the fabulous Scott Duff the night of the awards. We're going to.
Are you going to live? What do you call it? Blogcast?
Well, we're not really going to live blogcast, but you know, Scott and I'll be able to relive it moment by moment, I'm sure, and you all will listen if you choose to do so. But well, good. We're all open and willing to go through this experience with Seth MacFarlane. Let's talk about some of the categories. I always love the, since I know you are an honorable man and you tend to vote with your heart, but we can all kind of vote with, you know, who will win and probably who should win and won't for whatever reason. Let's start with some of the supporting categories, because I always think those are really interesting. And there's some real powerhouses in the supporting categories this year. Let's start with supporting actor.
Okay.
In that category, we've got
Alan Arkin for Argo, De Niro for Silver Linings Playbook, Philip Seymour Hoffman for The Master, Tommy Lee Jones for Lincoln, and Christoph Waltz for Django Unchained.
All right. Who will win? Who should win?
I think this is going to go between Tommy Lee Jones and De Niro.
So you're not swayed by the Golden Globes giving it to Christoph?
I have to be honest right at the bat. I have not seen Django.
Okay.
And I don't plan to.
Okay.
Tarantino's, what I kind of think is sort of a sophomoric, you know, propensity for violence that he's had from day one. It's like, it's so juvenile. Come on, let it go. Let's get beyond it.
Mm-hmm.
It just holds me back from seeing his movies until much later. And I don't know.
Well, I have to say for me, I really, I haven't seen Django either. So you and I are in the exact same boat, but I have to say, you know, Tommy Lee Jones, the flashy role, I mean, you know, so many people comment on him specifically when you walk out of that movie. But I have to say the shocker to me was De Niro. And I really feel like he came out of the De Niro coma and, like, got real with Bradley Cooper and Jackie Weaver and these actors that he was, you know, he rose to the challenge in a way I feel like he hasn't in a really long time. I just loved him so much.
Well, you're talking about an actor who people have venerated for 35 years and does movie after movie after movie. I mean, it's like he's like the American Michael Caine. Every time you turn around, or Samuel L. Jackson, he's in every movie. And it's hard to start to discern between one performance and the next. And this one, in particular, the way it was written, the way it was directed, he really did sort of like stick out. I mean, it's not that he hasn't given a lot of great performances in movies you've never seen, or, you know, they were on TBS one night. Mm-hmm. For some reason, this arrived at a certain time, and people got behind it, and it gave him something to do a little different. So I would very much be happy with him, you know, walking home with the Oscar.
Do you think that Tommy Lee will walk away with it?
Well, I don't know. See, I'm always so hesitant to go on the line. He does what he does every time. And I love Tommy Lee Jones. He does that crabby pants thing.
Mm-hmm.
There were some really cool little twists. I don't want to give it away for those who haven't seen Lincoln.
Yeah.
I mean, Lincoln to me, you know, it's like a master class in film acting. When you're Spielberg and you have the budget, every actor in the world that you want will line up to do, and every tiny part in that movie, I don't care if the person has two lines, is like a tremendous actor.
Well, they hired so many New York stage actors, I guess because they filmed in Virginia, but it was like Broadway stage actor after Broadway stage actor, which I just thought, or the great character actors who do TV or film, you know, but it was really an interesting palette of actors that they cast in that, I guess, because there were so many parts, you know, that were it was a huge cast. But so I guess we're saying it's kind of a toss up. De Niro, Tommy Lee, that's where we think it's going to land. I'm going to say I really want De Niro to win it. But I would not be sad if Tommy Lee won it. I don't know if he's won an Oscar, and he definitely deserves one if he has not.
He won the Oscar for The Fugitive.
Oh, yes, yes. So
and basically the same role.
Yeah, De Niro. Yeah, De Niro hasn't won one in a while. I think like Raging Bull and something else were his two. They won
Godfather
them very close
Part
together.
Two. Yeah, so that's the other thing. It's been 32 years since De Niro walked up on stage. And Alan Arkin, that's why I think he won for Little Miss Sunshine, because there's part of it that, you know, we want to honor the career.
Yep.
And I kind of have a feeling, I know people, I sort of feel like that's why Streep won for Iron Lady. It's like, all right, the Susan Lucci effect. Just give her the damn award already, you know?
Yeah, because I really wanted Viola to win that year. But I love Meryl Streep. All right, let's look at the ladies, the supporting actress in that category. We've also got five amazing ladies.
Amy Adams for The Master, Sally Field for Lincoln, Anne Hathaway for Les Miserables, Helen Hunt for The Sessions, and Jackie Weaver for Silver Linings Playback. Let me start right there. What the hell is she doing in this category?
Jackie Weaver. She's so different in this, though, than she is in Animal Kingdom or anything else. I mean, once again, whether or not she deserves to be in this category, I don't
know. Come on, Pat, I'm making Krabby Snacks. I'm making Krabby Shabby. That's all she does. Come on, I'm making Krabby Snacks.
Yeah, who would you have put in that category? Would you have put Maggie Smith, some people had said, or Nicole Kidman?
Judy Dench in Skyfall.
Oh, interesting. That would have been an interesting choice, Richard Knight. That would have been an interesting choice. Do you have a favorite in this category? I mean, everybody's saying, like, I hate when somebody is such an obvious, like, oh, it's going to be Anne Hathaway. She's won everything. Anne Hathaway would not be where I would go with this category, but I'm very curious what you would do.
Well, I think she's got the edge because it's, to me, again, this is the Hilary Swank effect. She cut her hair on screen. She got pummeled. She's singing live while she's choking back tears. She's taking it up the butt while she's singing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everything, but they, why didn't they pull her fingernails out at the same time?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, she's going to win just because of what they really put her through the acting ringer. She was very, you know, she was good.
Yeah.
To me, Sally Field, you know, is the dark horse. I loved her work in Lincoln.
Me too. You and I are so similar.
Man.
I thought she was so good, and I feel like it's her turn too. And I have to say, I thought Helen Hunt was better than The Sessions, than the movie that she got the Oscar for. I thought she was great in The Sessions. Her and John Hawkes, who I think was overlooked, right?
Criminally
overlooked in a movie that our very good friend, Rusty Schwimmer, was also in. But I... You know, for me, I really hope Sally Field isn't upset. I don't know if she will be, but I just thought she was phenomenal in this film and got to be her most Sally Field-esque best. Like, everything that she can do better than everybody else, she almost got to do in this movie entirely, you know?
Yeah, she really did. And you're like, okay, that's why I love Sally Field.
Yep. Just like smart and vulnerable and scary and, you know, on the very edge of being sane and insane. And I just thought she was fantastic.
But she didn't cut her hair on screen.
I know.
She didn't take it up the butt on screen.
She gained 20 pounds, though. She gained 20 pounds. Anne Hathaway lost,
you know, 15 pounds. She didn't sing live for 12 hours. She didn't sing through her tears.
I don't know. I think Sally Field is a far bigger role, a far bigger challenge. No one has played that role. And many, many, many an actress has played Fontaine. I understand people are saying she did it like no one else because she did a film version, and so she got to do it like nobody else. But
well, this is also, you know, last year I really wanted Glenn Close to win for Albert Nobbs. People go, well, she didn't do anything. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
Go back and look at that, and how hard is it for an actor? You're an actor, Amy. You know this.
Yeah.
To do so little.
Yeah.
And there's that moment where she reveals this huge interior life.
Mm.
And there was something that Sally Field did where she's contained. It's in the scene with Daniel Day-Lewis where she finally just says, go ahead, put me in the madhouse. You know, like she just loses it.
Yep.
And you're like, oh, my God, this guy has lived with this.
Yep.
I mean, there's such a reality. I don't know. So, yeah, I'm with you. But I kind of think that, you know, Miss Hathaway is going to take it. So.
She probably will, and I love Anne Hathaway. I really
do. Oh, I do too.
And
I loved her in The Dark Knight Rises. She was my favorite thing in the movie.
Well, and I mean, I loved her in The Wedding.
Rachel Getting Married.
Rachel Getting Married.
Yes,
brilliant.
She's
you know. Yeah,
kind
I mean,
of
she's a great. She's charming. You know. I adore her. I just feel like Sally Field's performance is just...
Well, what do you think about this backlash? You know, there's all this backlash about how Anne Hathaway, oh, she's not really so nice. Everybody's now, you know, sniping about, she did Miss Goody
Two-Shoes. If I ever meet her, I'll let you know what I think about that kind of BS.
You read so much buzz about, oh, she just, you know, and she was counting her lines.
Oh, my God. No idea. God, it's working for her, whatever the hell she's doing.
Yeah, there you go.
So, I want to go to animated features because this was kind of a great year where it's not like exactly a Nemo year, right? Or a year where there's just this one like, oh my God, that's easily going to win because there's so many really interesting little animated films this year with Brave, which was the first Pixar to have a female character, and there's no prince, which I really loved. It's not about a prince. Frankenweenie from Tim Burton, who's given us a little bit of that. Paranorman, super interesting premise. The Pirates, I don't know. Band of Misfits. And then Wreck-It Ralph, which is still playing well in the theaters. Do you have a thought on this category at all?
Well, first of all, I love that three of these five movies are basically queer movies.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I mean, Brave, you just said it. That is a lesbian coming-of-age sort of, you know, movie, which I loved. Frankie Weenie, he's a little gay boy.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Paranorman, he's a little gay boy.
Right.
Wreck-It Ralph, voices by Jane Lynch. I think there's two or three other gay people behind that one, too.
It's the queerest category, right?
Right, the homo category. I don't know the pirates, but pirates are gay, so.
Yeah. Many of them were.
I thought Brave was finally a reason to see a movie in 3D for her hair.
Mm.
For Merida. I think her name is Merida, the young heroine, voiced by Kelly MacDonald. That, to me, was so charming and fun and spirited. It took a lot of other stories. It took some of, you know, Little Princess, and took some of Beauty and the Beast and this and that. And the whole Scottish, I loved it and have watched it probably five times, and I'm delighted every single time.
You are a princess, Richard Knight Jr. I love you.
Come on,
I love you so much.
She's so great. I don't need a
man at all.
And she gets that arrow out and outshoots the boys and, feisty and fun.
And it's a mother-daughter film, which, often, and we think about the classic Disney movies, mother is gone. Mother dies or mother is gone. Princesses don't really have moms, or moms have, you know, die. And we watch them die. Dumbo, Bambi, you know, mom dies. So it's so great to have the mother be a character that helps create character for the young girl, and that the young girl, through being a reflection of the mother, helps the mother come back to a sense of who she is, you know. And I just thought that that was really a beautiful premise. I know it's not the best, probably reviewed of the Pixar movies, but I thought it was a real triumph. So I hope Brave wins.
And I just
also
sort of discount all that stuff. You know, Paranorman, I also really adored.
Yep.
But it's admittedly it's a much thinner story. There's not a whole lot to it. I mean, it looks great. It feels great. And again, he's a little gay boy who talks to dead people. Frank and Weenie look great. Also, very thin story.
Yeah. So we're going for Brave.
Definitely going for Brave.
So the most obvious category of the night the actor in a leading role? We've got, you name the candidates, and then we'll talk about the obvious elephant in the room.
Bradley Cooper, Silver Linings Playbook, Daniel Day-Lewis, Lincoln, Hugh Jackman, Les Miserables, Joaquin Phoenix, The Master, and Denzel Washington, Flight. And obviously, the elephant in the room is Daniel Day-Lewis for Lincoln.
Yep.
Now, I felt that his work in There Must Be Blood, There Will Be Blood, I Have to Have Blood, was literally one of the greatest performances ever captured on film.
Wow, I've never seen it. I think I even own a copy of it, and I have never seen it. So I guess you've just made me tell me I need to watch it.
You do. Well, yeah, and you have to be in the mood, because it's a challenging piece. But his, and I think, I don't want to say he matched it, but his work in Lincoln, again, it's like to humanize such a mythic icon in all of our lives, American lives, was tremendous. And from the subtlety, the scene where he goes in with the little boy and lays down on the floor with him, the way he dealt with Sally Field, the way he dealt with his cabinet, the inner fire, when he finally tells that inner circle what he wants done.
Yeah.
You know, there's an end to his patience. So many little things. And it's so weird because you see that same kind of technique in service to a film role like Guido in Nine, where it doesn't work, and all of his technique is for naught. So to put that against somebody like Hugh Jackman, who is very good in Les Mis, but unfortunately the score out of his vocal range, much thinner part, or a Joaquin Phoenix, who's a brilliant actor, but is playing this very disturbed, difficult character that audiences can't really embrace. You know, there's a popularity thing here, too. The only one I think who really could be a challenger would be Denzel.
I agree. If Daniel Day-Lewis wasn't in this category this year and it was I don't know who, I would have given my vote to Denzel Washington. I think it's the performance of his career besides Glory. I think it's unbelievable work. I really loved him in that movie so much. But I don't think, and he's just won for Training Day. I mean, I know Daniel Day-Lewis has just won too, but I mean, I think this is Daniel Day-Lewis's year. I think everybody is going to be happy to hand it to him. And
yeah, and you know, I also want to give a quick shout out to Bradley Cooper because he really elevated. I think he's a very good actor and has done a lot of good work. And because he's so easy on the eyes, and you know, the whole, you know, he's has no problem, you know, playing gay roles or being thought of as gay or whatever, whether he is or not, I don't know. But you know, and the popular with the Hangover movies kind of stuff. But he really stepped outside a little bit. And I mean, that scene where he wants the wedding video and wakes up the whole neighborhood.
Right, right, right.
He didn't go quite, you know, he goes crazy, but not too crazy. Anyway, I thought he was very good in that film.
Yeah, it's a really, that's a real special little film, you know, and I think it's kind of why I think De Niro may win to give that film something, because that film is very special, and it's definitely acknowledged in a number of different categories this year. So I feel like, kind of interestingly enough, the weakest category and also probably going to be the most surprising what happens is the actress in a leading role this year.
The nominations are Jessica Chastain for Zero Dark Thirty, Jennifer Lawrence for Silver Linings Playbook, Emmanuel Riva for Amour, The Kid, in Beasts of the Southern Wild.
Quvenzhané.
Wallace.
Mm-hmm.
Beasts of the Southern Wild and Naomi Watts for The Impossible. I completely agree with you. This is one of the weakest years for actress category.
I don't even know if it's the weakest. I just don't even know if they considered them all. I mean, it's kind of weird. It's like, well, if you're going to make Jennifer Lawrence an actress in a leading role, then I kind of feel like you could have put Helen Hunt as a leading role. I mean, I don't know. I feel like it's kind of interesting. I know the movies, I think, submit where they go, but I don't know. I mean, I guess Jennifer Lawrence's leading role, I thought she was great.
Say again?
I said, I think her work was great, but I don't know if I feel like it was leading role work. So that's the interesting thing.
Well, if you compare her work in that to her work in The Hunger Games, no.
Right.
And, you know, I liked her work in that film better, and I enjoyed that film much better.
Mm-hmm.
But,
well,
you know.
Jessica Chastain, you know, got the Golden Globe. I have seen all of these, except I have not seen The Impossible at the time that we're recording this, and hopefully I will get to, because I'm a huge Naomi Watts fan. I know there's controversy around this film that the family is actually Spanish or Latino or whatever, and they couldn't be any whiter if you were, you know, Australian and Scottish, which Ewan McGregor and Naomi Watts are. I have to say, I feel like the two best performances in this category are its youngest and oldest representatives in Quvenzhané Wallace, the little 6-year-old at the time girl in Beasts of the Southern Wild, and an 80-something-year-old Emmanuel Riva, who is just astounding in Amour. And will the Academy give it to her for a French film, you know, that is so slow and stark and, you know, just, I don't even know, infectious in a weird way of just like you can't look away at her performance, or at least I couldn't. And yet it's
tough. Yeah, she's tremendous.
Tough.
She's tremendous. I would say of these nominees, she's probably my choice.
Yeah.
First of all, I want to go back to the kid Oscar. I don't want kids competing with adults.
I agree with that.
Judy Garland in The Wizard of Oz took home the child Oscar.
Yeah.
I don't care. I'm still mad that Anna Paquin took home the Oscar for The Piano for being on screen and dancing around. I mean, and, you know, the little girl is very good, but but she's a little girl.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I totally agree. I do have to say it's one of the best performances of the year. There are the nuances, and I mean, it's one of the best performances of the year in any of these four categories, I think. Maybe not the voiceovers, but just watching her interact in the world is like a masterclass. But she's six, so that's how she interacts in the world.
Yeah, so I don't know if I go quite that far, because a lot of it is instinctual, and who knows what they did to make her do it, I don't know. You I can't put that up against the technique that Emmanuel Riva brought to, you know, her role, or Naomi Watts brings to The Impossible, or even Jennifer Lawrence brings to her, or any of these actresses.
I think Jessica Chastain's a phenomenal actress. I don't know what got in my way of thinking it was. I think it's just because it's just not a very strong category this year. And I just finally saw Emmanuel Riva, and her performance really eclipsed for me anything that Jessica Chastain did. Strong as her performance is, it is strong. I couldn't get over the fact how beautiful she looked. I couldn't get over the fact that I couldn't get over some of the costume and art direction and hair and makeup on her to see her performance. And I felt like that was a shame. It's not that she can't be an attractive woman in that position, but I didn't feel like it was authentic. I thought, I don't believe that. I don't believe you look like that if you're in that environment, you know?
Well, I take your point. I think I just also felt like she was on the side, you know, that they're really, I kept waiting for a moment, and it didn't come until the very, very end.
That
she was not really the central person. Yeah. I mean, when you look again, I'm going back to The Hunger Games, though the movie is focused on that Jennifer Lawrence character, Katniss, or whatever her name is, the girl with the arrow, or even like Merida in Brave, it's her movie. We don't have any movie here except for, well, I guess the little kid one, it's mostly focused on the kid's point of view. The Emmanuel Riva, it's pretty much about her.
Yeah.
But there's no Julia Roberts, Erin Brockovich kind of, you know, part here.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no Meryl Streep Iron Lady, where that's the movie. And
yeah,
if you don't
Viola
embrace,
Davis, even.
Yeah,
you know?
In The Help. I mean, that we don't have that. And that, to me, feels like, well, were there people, I don't know, the Marin in Hitchcock?
Mm-hmm.
Again, not really, it's more of a central thing, but I looked over my list and I was like, I don't know if there's anybody
Cate
else.
Yeah, Cate Blanchett really didn't perform this year, or Kate Winslet, or Julianne Moore, just some of them are not having big movies out this year, I guess.
Right,
so.
It just wasn't a great year for, you know, I loved Emma Watson in The Perks of Being a Wallflower, but again, that's not really the central character.
Yeah, yeah, interesting. So, I want to do two kind of at the same time if we can, and we'll wrap this up. But the two big categories, and usually they go hand in hand, best director and best picture. But the interesting thing is now they only have five director nominations, but they have a list of, you know, 9 or 10 movies this year. So let's do directors first. We've got Amour, Michael Haneke, Beast of the Southern Wild, Ben Zeitlin, Life of Pi by Ang Lee, Lincoln, Steven Spielberg, and Silver Linings Playbook, David O. Russell.
Well,
I mean, they're so freaking different, these five directors. I can't even.
Yeah.
I mean, they could not be five more very. I mean, you get the European French kind of. I mean, the other Haneke films are just. You know, this is the only one that has a little bit of heart. Many of his films are so disturbing. Ben Zeitlin is, you know, renegade indie filmmaker. Ang Lee, you know, master technician. Of whatever world he's creating. I loved Life of Pi. I really loved that movie. We haven't talked about it, but I thought it was a 3D
triumph as well. I actually have not seen Life of Pi.
See it, and see it in 3D, because it's really an experience. I haven't seen a lot of 3D movies, but it is by far, to me, the most beautiful 3D movie I've ever seen.
I've heard that.
I mean, you know, Steven Spielberg, all heart, all passion, all soaring, big, feeling kind of director. And then Silver Linings Playbook, David O. Russell, you know, quirky, fierce, raw, kind of funny in his perverse kind of humor look at life. They're
well,
so different.
I would say with these choices, first of all, I the omission for me is Kathryn Bigelow for Zero Dark Thirty.
Yep.
Who should be there instead of the Beast director, but maybe not. I don't know. I'm going to tend towards Spielberg.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, again, he assembled this group and, you know, winnowed down Tony Kushner's script from, you know, 5 hours or 500 pages to, you know, focus. And basically, Lincoln is an interior movie. There are these cramped, smoky, cigar-smoky interiors, and a lot of actors, a lot of people crowding the frame, and to make those choices where you, everything is, you know, distinctive from the next line or you know, those moments really stand out in your mind, he's just so good at doing that.
Now, you said you really, and I agree with you, I think this is Spielberg's year as a director. I think he will, out of those five nominees, I think he'll be the winner. What you said you felt like Beasts of the Southern Wild should not be nominated, and you feel like Kathryn Bigelow. What are your feelings on a film we've not talked about much, Argo, and Ben Affleck this year?
Well, you know, I loved Argo. I really did, and he's another one who maybe should have been in this category, and there has been, you know, now that it's won the Golden Globe, and I think, didn't it just win the SAG Award, too, or something?
Yep.
Or whatever. I thought the opening of the film was beautifully directed, and there were many things in the film. The scenes in the Canadian embassy with these actor, you know, these people just bored and pissed off and wanting to get out, and there's, you know, crabby. If I had a problem, it was the whole suspense thing, that there's a point where you go, okay, enough, come on, this is so manufactured. And I felt that there was a point where, as a director, he could have said, okay, we can do one of these, two of these, three of these, but here there's four or five of them, you know, levels to, you know, they're trying to get on the plane, and then they're trying to get out of the car, and then they're trying to get past this, and that. And it's one of those things where you just have to sort of say, okay, maybe it wasn't really like this, but I'm going to go along with it.
He's really shown himself, though, that he's going to be one to continue to watch and continue to watch his filmmaking grow and expand, because it's definitely a strong movie. And it's one of the movies nominated for Best Film. We've got Amour, Life of Pi, Argo, Lincoln, Beast of the Southern Wild, Silver Linings Playbook, Zero Dark Thirty, Django Unchained, and Les Mis. Will it be a director and film pair up? Do you think Lincoln is the obvious win of the night?
Well, that seemed to be the way things were going, but now that Argo has sort of won some prizes, I think now they're sort of neck and neck. And I wouldn't mind, because I really, really enjoyed Argo, and it was a really smart, interesting movie. I think Affleck did do a really good job. I was really entertained, and it was thought-provoking. And I learned something. And I think, you know, then you have that whole thing that it's 1979, 1980, so there's all that bad fashion. And there's a lot of that. So it's an entertaining picture as well, where Lincoln is a little bit drier, a little bit more of a history lesson, more talky-talky, not so action-y.
So, and Argo's nominated for a lot of other, you know, awards, we should say, technical categories and some other categories. So, you know, and for, you know, I mean, it's obviously up against Lincoln in some of the key categories, adapted screenplay and some sound and things like that. But, you know, it's definitely standing on its own with its nominations. So I think that'll be interesting. I think it'll be interesting to see if with Ben Affleck not being nominated and not really having a strong amount of actors nominated from it, you know, will it pull it off? And maybe it'll have the momentum to turn the tide. It's Hollywood likes a great success story, and Ben Affleck definitely, to me, is the success story of the year. the comeback kid. He's really dug his way out, you know, the past number of years, making smaller movies that are getting a little bigger, and now he's got a big contender. So,
well, we could have an upset. You know, I go back to 1951, A Streetcar Named Desire. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think what else was nominated that year. The African Queen, mm-hmm. and a little movie called American in Paris. There was no way an American in Paris was going to win. And they open the envelope and they announce the winner is Les Miserables. I mean, that mm-hmm. film is so divisive with people. They mm-hmm. love that movie, or they really don't like it so much.
Yeah.
So, I mean, who knows? Maybe they'll... It'll be very interesting year.
Yeah. What was just your favorite movie that you watched this year? Doesn't even have to be nominated. Doesn't have to be a big movie. Doesn't have to be a small movie. It can be whatever.
Skyfall.
You enjoyed Skyfall. Good.
I loved it from beginning to end. I wish that was in there. It was just delightful. I was like, oh my gosh, shake it. Shake me and stir me. Keep going. Keep going, baby.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for all your picks. And hopefully everybody, we've given you at least our thoughts, our 2 cents. Then you can throw yours in the pot and see what you come out with on Oscar night. The Oscars are airing on the 85th Academy Awards, Sunday, February 24th on ABC, 7 o'clock Eastern. Of course, start at 6 o'clock here in Chicago. And we will be having a post-show recording that night that will be coming out the next day with Scott Duff, where we'll just dish about catty things and who looked pretty and who sounded stupid and things like that. But we're at least going to take you in with a little bit of class with Richard Knight Jr. Thanks, Richard, so much for being on with us
you.
Tonight.
I love being a touch of class.
You are. Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast. Queer and now.